Curled up round his gun in the tent that night, Lindsay dreamt of falling. Then he woke up, and it was true. But there was grass a few feet below him, and he landed hard but unhurt. Overhead, the cold stars sleeted their light through air, untainted with the merest hint of pollution. Creatures of the night chattered and roared in the trees down by the dry river. It was as cold as a tropical night can be, just before sunrise. Lindsay was up and running, moving swiftly to the nearest white-painted marker post, which would place him, more or less, in the centre of the compound. Time was when he thought this was all he needed. Just rig a simple beam inside the tent each night, so that anything moving would trigger the belt unit, sending him back one world where a network of crude markers would allow him to position himself aright, so that he could flip back and jump the intruder. Two leopards and one visit from Big Yin had discouraged him. Stockades were less taxing. The baboon had gibbered when Lindsay had levelled the gun a foot from it and fired, but it hadn't run far. It had stopped and looked back, hard. Tonight's intruder must have come from inside the stockade. Lindsay wondered which of them it was. Then he skidded, trod on a stone that skittered away, went down heavily, awkwardly, felt a snap, screamed, punched the belt. Back at the stockade, dawn was yellow-green and bright, with a fresh breeze blowing off the brackish reed beds that were the Mediterranean. It stirred the papers on Lindsay's rough desk. They were black, with tiny handwriting. Making paper was a time-consuming and messy job. A loner in the High Megas conserved paper like a medieval scholar, covering both sides thickly. There was also a millennia map of the local Earths, its finely printed concentric circles almost hidden by the red dots and shading with which Lindsay had plotted the progress of the fist. Shea peered at it, noting how the asteroids, because many fists had pummeled the soft Earth, had done more and more damage in each dimension. She had been too busy hunting and being hunted to notice it in the past dozen worlds, but even so, it must have made the planet ring like a gong when it hit. Lindsay watched her, the gun clutched at his side, his mind a grey fog through which the pain of his ankle pierced like tiny lightning flashes. There were only a limited number of detril painkillers in his kit. He had already used a third of them. She looked up. "You ought to let me look at that," she said. "Paranoia is all very well. Gangrene is worse."
"It's not that bad."
"Sue your face for slander, then." Lindsay shifted, and the white spear of agony shot through his leg. It must have shown. "Look," said Shea. "Even I can see the blood pooling. What have you got to lose? I've had training, I could..."
"No."
"You know why I came to your tent last night?"
"He said you'd got a knife."
"He would, wouldn't he? I came to persuade you, by any means necessary. You won't listen to the voice of reason. I wondered if you would listen to... older voices." He made the mistake of laughing. Even laughing hurt. And it wasn't well received. "If you're so sure," she snapped, standing up, "I could kill you now, couldn't I?" She pointed to Valiente, dozing, curled up beside the tent. "He couldn't stop me, and maybe you wouldn't be able to," she snarled. "You're running out of time keeping us here. You've got the gun now, but how long will you be able to aim properly? You'll have to trust someone then, and maybe I won't be listening." And then Valiente was up and running, running into the tent, and then out the other side, running strongly, one of the belts now in his hand, out through the open gateway into the waist-high grass. Lindsay struggled up, leant against the table, raised the rifle in a shaky movement, took instant aim, and fired. The distant man jerked and fell. Lindsay half fell back into the chair, his face grey with pain.
"I would have said it was you," he said. "He seemed too simple. I'd really made up my mind it was you. If the damn fool had got the belt round him, he could have moved out instead of running. I wonder why he didn't."
"You scare people," she said. "That's why. Living out here drains something from people. You're too far away from everyone else, I guess. Still, you made the right choice of who to trust." Give me the gun.
He didn't slacken his grip. She moved closer.
I've got to go and see, she said, a new note in her voice. I don't give a damn if he's dead, but if you only winged him, he might be back. Give me the gun.